Good afternoon, and welcome to the Westmoreland Coal Company 2016 earnings conference call. At this time, all telephone participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the prepared comments, instructions will be given for the question-and-answer session. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded today, and a replay will be available as soon as practical on the investor portion of the company's website. I would now like to turn the call over to Jennifer Almquist of Investor Relations. Thank you. You may begin.
Thanks, Adam. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining our call. On the call today are Kevin Paprzycki, our Chief Executive Officer, and Gary Cohn, our Chief Financial Officer. Before Kevin and Gary's prepared comments and the question-and-answer session, please let me remind you that statements on today's call regarding Westmoreland's expected future performance and conditions constitute forward-looking statements within the meaning of federal securities laws. These statements are subject to certain risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those expressed in the forward-looking statements. For a discussion of such risks and uncertainties, please see our most recent Form 10-K as filed with the SEC. We expressly disclaim any obligation to update or revise publicly any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Also, during today's call, we will refer to certain non-GAAP financial measures. Reconciliations of these non-GAAP financial measures to the most directly comparable GAAP measures are included in the press release we published today. In addition, during the call today, we will make references to a slide presentation. This presentation, as well as our SEC filings and press releases, including the three press releases we issued today, are available on our website at westmoreland.com. With that, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to Kevin.
Thanks, Jen. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to touch on our overall performance in 2016, recap the strategic priorities we set for the year, and preview 2017. I'll then hand the call over to Gary, who will recap our financials, provide some additional color, and discuss 2017 guidance. Looking at the deck we posted online, my comments will begin on slide three. We are pleased with our fourth quarter execution and our strong finish for the year. Solid fourth quarter operational results drove record adjusted EBITDA for the second consecutive quarter. This also propelled us to an annual adjusted EBITDA record. More importantly, we generated 2016 free cash flow above our expectations. In addition to our solid results, we executed well on the five key priorities we outlined for 2016. These priorities helped drive our free cash flow, which was then used to pay down debt. Our first priority was to optimize working capital. During 2016, we generated favorable cash from working capital, including $13 million in cash from tighter inventory management. Our supply chain organization also built the foundation to begin leveraging our global purchasing power. Second, we said we would focus on limiting the cash drag of our non-core assets. I believe our team was successful for both Coal Valley and Rova. At Coal Valley, we worked quickly to capitalize on the rise in Newcastle pricing. We expect to be cash flow breakeven in 2017 and are well into the process of pursuing strategic alternatives for the mine. For Rova, we amended our power supply agreement and will now provide capacity power through purchase contracts. This allows us to reduce our projected cash flow burn by 50% through March 2019 and will better position us to free up Rova's restricted cash. Third, we said we would explore opportunities to lower our cost of capital through equipment financing. The change in our revolver banking group delayed our progress here, but we will ramp up activity now that we've filed our year-end financials. Our fourth priority was to execute well on the things we could control. 2016 started off with challenging market conditions. Great operational performance and favorable summer weather allowed us to exceed our targets. Nowhere was our strong operational performance better illustrated than in San Juan. When we acquired San Juan, the team began executing on a plan to reduce cost, improve safety, and perform a significant longwall move. The San Juan team performed flawlessly, significantly reduced coal cost, and ended the year ahead on all operating metrics, helping to preserve the longevity of the customer's plant. My sincere thanks to the team for your hard work and dedication and for delivering solid results while facing challenging headwinds. We also launched our One Westmoreland initiative aimed at streamlining the organization and standardizing our processes. As we transitioned out of our recent growth period, we took steps to centralize our administrative functions, enabling us to run leaner. We also moved from three separate ERP systems to one, thanks to the great effort by many members of the Westmoreland team. The culmination of all these initiatives was to delever, strengthen the balance sheet, and begin to reduce interest expense. 2016 was also a year of leadership transition for our executive group. Our team made it a priority to spend the year visiting customers and employees. Our meetings with customers were a great opportunity for us to strengthen relationships and identify ways to best serve them. The visits we had with employees were very rewarding for me personally. I experienced firsthand the passion the Westmoreland team has for lowering our cost and keeping our customers competitive. Internally, we call this preserving the base. I want to thank everyone for their dedication to this key initiative. Our most important accomplishment in 2016 was our safety performance. I'm proud to say our reportable incidents for our base business improved 30% year over year. We also dramatically improved San Juan's safety record. Much of our success there is a result of our extraordinary culture. Looking ahead, our strategy for 2017 looked much like our strategy in 2016. We'll continue to make progress on our key priorities. First, we will continue to raise the bar on our overall safety performance. Second, we will preserve the base by lowering our overall costs and maximizing our customers' competitive positions. Third, we will take the final steps towards reducing the operational drag from our non-core assets. Fourth, we will again focus on maximizing our cash flow through our One Westmoreland initiatives, equipment financing, and supply chain management. And lastly, as we continue to reduce our leverage and strengthen our balance sheet, we look forward to working with our newly formed board-level finance committee. Tapping into the strong capital markets expertise we've recently added to our board, we will together evaluate the best ways to achieve our goals. This includes evaluating options for deploying the cash received in the early prepayment from Capital Power. I want to reiterate the factors which make Westmoreland different: our superior contracts, our exceptional assets, and our outstanding cash flow. Furthermore, our success is in our own hands. We are not dependent on open market coal prices or planning commissions in China or other market factors. We are dependent on how our operators perform. This allows us to deliver results regardless of what happens in the markets. We believe that coal-fired power will continue to be part of the overall North American energy landscape for decades. The plants that thrive will have streamlined, non-rail reliant operations and the ability for carbon capture. In short, we believe many of our customers already fit this model, and this positions us to come out ahead. As I turn the call over to Gary, I want to congratulate him on becoming our new CFO. Gary has done a tremendous job of managing through several challenges since taking on the interim role in November. I am confident in his abilities as a leader and his fit into Westmoreland's culture. I am pleased he has accepted the opportunity to step in on a permanent basis. With that, I'll hand the call over to Gary.
Thank you, Kevin. Good afternoon, everybody. Our model allows us to operate with protected volumes and protected margins, with the biggest variable being weather-driven demand. Weather in our core markets for the year was lumpy quarter to quarter, but demand averaged out for the full year. For the small portion of our operation subject to open market dynamics, volumes and pricing were pressured, but our operators mitigated this through another year of excellent performance. We sold 19% more tons in the quarter compared with the fourth quarter of 2015, driven primarily by additional volume from San Juan. For the full year, we sold 55 million tons compared with 53 million tons in 2015. We delivered fourth quarter adjusted EBITDA of $89 million, bringing the full year to $272 million. These are record-setting levels for us and at the high end of our guidance, even before adjusting for the $6 million restatement benefit. We grew adjusted EBITDA normalized for San Juan and the change in loan lease receivables by 17% in the quarter and 5% for the full year compared to the same period in 2015. Turning to slide 6 for a look at our segments. We grew U.S. adjusted EBITDA 88% for the fourth quarter and 64% for the full year over the same periods in 2015. San Juan added $18 million and $54 million to adjusted EBITDA for the fourth quarter and full year 2016. We also benefited from favorable weather and more customer uptime than last year. In Canada, adjusted EBITDA was up 12% for the quarter, but down 16% for the full year, while demand remained relatively flat. The change in loan and lease receivables led the decline in EBITDA for the full year 2016 compared with 2015. Also impacting Canada were unfavorable operating weather conditions, an extended dragline outage, and lower Newcastle pricing year over year. We did not benefit in 2016 from the back half run-up in pricing because our contracts at Coal Valley are priced up to a year in advance. Looking at the MLP, fourth quarter and full year adjusted EBITDA experienced double-digit growth compared with the same periods in 2015, despite flat volumes and lower pricing. This is a testament to the dedication of the Ohio and Kemmer teams and their outstanding execution, leading to extensive cost savings. Turning to slide 7, we overachieved our cash flow targets for the year, delivering $113 million of free cash flow. We entered the year with cash generation as a key objective, and we delivered that by delivering solid adjusted EBITDA, executing our working capital initiatives, especially supply inventory management, and tightly managing our capital expenditures. We generated this cash flow despite moving our company-wide 401k match from stock to cash, which we did to prevent significant dilution. Our free cash flow is the net of the $152 million in cash from operating activities we generated, plus the $7 million of loan and lease receivables we collected, less the $46 million of capital expenditures we made. We grew cash balances for the year by $37 million to finish the year with cash on hand of $60 million. We ended the year with gross debt of $1.1 billion. We made approximately $43 million of principal payments, $27 million of capital lease payments, and paid cash interest of $96 million. In 2016, we added debt of $125 million to purchase San Juan. We have repaid $30 million, or about 25% of that loan. We also added $26 million in capital leases and other debt to take advantage of lower interest rates in place of spending cash. Our intent in 2016 was to reduce more of the parent debt, and our focus in 2017 remains on delevering to strengthen our balance sheet. I want to take a minute to express my appreciation for your patience in waiting on our earnings release, and importantly, want to thank the excellent Westmoreland accounting team who has worked tirelessly making the required restatement changes over the past several weeks. We are well served by their professionalism day in and day out. We will be providing a quarterly adjusted EBITDA table with the changes for 2015 and 2016 for your reference when we report first quarter earnings. We took steps in 2016, as we said we would, to address the drag created by our two non-core assets. First, we amended our agreement at Rova to accomplish two positive outcomes. We reduced the projected cash flow burn over the next 2.5 years to $14 million from what was expected to be a burn of around $27 million. Keep in mind that we have $22 million in cash collateral that we expect to be returned half this year and half next year. And by entering into this amendment, we will no longer have to operate the plant past March. This de-risks our operations and allows for a potential sale. Second, we locked in pricing at Coal Valley that will eliminate what could have been a $10 million cash burn in 2017. We also have been running a strategic process for Coal Valley, including a potential sale of the mine. Now let's turn to slide 8 for our 2017 outlook. The contracted nature of our business model provides visibility and allows us to deliver consistent adjusted EBITDA and cash flow year after year. With that said, the variability we experience is from changes in weather-driven demand, the small portion of our business subject to market conditions, and conclusion of some contracts. In 2017, we expect to sell between 40 and 50 million tons. Importantly, of this, more than 90% of those tons are under margin-protected contracts. We are projecting adjusted EBITDA in the range of $280 to $310 million, including an incremental benefit of approximately $40 million related to the Capital Power prepayment and an approximate $15 to $20 million from the new accounting for reclamation. Relative to the $52 million Capital Power prepayment, our guidance reflects around $40 million of this payment to be incremental to our 2017 adjusted EBITDA and free cash flow. This prepayment will also eliminate the loan and lease receivable add-back we have been consistently highlighting as it settles that receivable in full. We have no further capital spend obligation at the mine. However, we will continue to receive the management fee portion for this contract mining operation, which is around $2 to $3 million annually. We expect this to run through 2030, shortened from its original contract expiry in the 2040s. Lastly, this early payment lowers our risk of stranded capital in Alberta. The additional changes from 2016 to 2017 adjusted EBITDA include, first, the contract expirations at Jewett and Beulah. The Jewett reclamation work, which replaces the coal supply agreement, will be performed over a longer period of time than we originally planned. Second, projected market softness in Ohio. We renewed a couple of contracts in late 2016 at lower prices and walked away from tons where the price was too low. We are not planning for a rebound in pricing or volumes for this part of our business. Third, a primary customer in Ohio recently notified us that they are extending their 2017 outage. They have chosen to accelerate investments in their plant while power prices and demand are low. Lastly, we are also taking a conservative view on weather-related demand given the warm start to the year. Despite the year-over-year step down in adjusted EBITDA, we expect consistent free cash flow in 2017. We expect to generate free cash flow of between $115 and $140 million in 2017. Contributing to this are capital expenditures of $40 to $50 million, cash interest of approximately $95 million, reclamation spending of around $30 million, and positive working capital. Additionally, we are expecting $10 million in restricted cash release from ROVA. As a reminder, cash related to bonding collateral is not captured in our free cash flow, but is additive to our cash position. We expect this year's results to follow a similar pattern as last year, with the third and fourth quarters being our strongest adjusted EBITDA and cash flow quarters. To wrap up, we are pleased with our overachievement in 2016, thanks to the strong execution by the Westmoreland team. Our goals in 2017 are much the same as last year, as we look to raise the bar on safety, preserve the base, mitigate our primary cash flow drags, optimize cash generation, and strengthen our balance sheet. We look forward to updating you on our progress. Adam, with that, we are ready for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please push star 1 on your telephone keypad now. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may push star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For any participant using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pushing the star key. One moment while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of David Gagliano from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, great. Thanks for taking my questions. I just had a few questions regarding the regarding the outlook, first of all. Just in terms of the volumes, I was wondering if you could split the volumes down in terms of the target between Canada, targets between Canada, the U.S., and the MLP. That's my first question.
Yeah, David, this is Gary. We for this year, we're providing guidance for the consolidated entity, and we'll just, obviously, as we report quarters, you'll see the actuals as we roll through the year. but from a guidance perspective, just wanted to set that at the high level, at the consolidated level.
Okay, let me ask you a different way then. When I look at the year-over-year change in volumes, can you give me a sense as to where the biggest deltas, the declines are for 17 versus 16 in the volumes in the guidance among those three buckets?
Yeah, I mean, obviously on the U.S. side, more specifically to the MLP side, you know, we're expecting pressure on both volumes and price in Ohio. So I would expect that you would see a step down in tons, certainly at the MLP.
Okay. All right, thank you. And then my second question is actually related to the Genesee transaction. I was wondering if you could just give us a little more color around what you know, what was behind that one-time upfront payment from Genesee, and also what was the EBITDA contribution and the CapEx associated with Genesee in 2016, please.
In 2015, did you ask, or 2016?
Well, I asked 16, actually, 2016.
Okay, yeah. And I do. Let me turn to the cash flow statement. If you look at our cash flow statement, you see the in the investing activities, you see the I just want to make sure I find it. You see the receipt from loan and lease receivables and the payments related to loan and lease receivables as really the last two lines in the cash flow from investing activities. So in 2015, the receipts were 21.9, really 22 million, and the outflows were 5.7. This year the inflow is 8.9 and the outflow is 2.2. But if you think back to what happened kind of November, December timeframe to your strategic question, the province of Alberta settled some of their liability, if you will, and their promises to make some of the coal producers and the folks in the area whole. Obviously, Cap Power was a part of that. So I would suggest that their settlement, their annual cash receipt, was the impetus to them deciding they wanted to pay down the receivable balance that they owed us for previous capital expenditures, and the rate of return that we were getting on that capital balance, that receivable balance, was a high cost of capital to them. So if you go back to their commentary throughout the end of December, and I think they put out a release today, this allows them to prepay that receivable that frankly was carrying a higher cost of capital than they would have liked.
Okay. All right, that's helpful. Thank you. I guess just one quick follow-up to that question, though, and if I asked it the wrong way, I apologize, but what was the EBITDA contribution from Genesee in 2016? I'm assuming that goes away after – obviously, we have a $40 million payment, one-time receipt in 2017, but I'm trying to figure out in 2018 sort of the run rate EBITDA impact from the loss of Genesee.
Yeah, if you think about what will be left – to collect will be the annual operating fee, which in our prepared remarks, if you missed it, it's about $2 to $3 million a year. That should continue through 2030.
Right. And what I'm asking is what flowed through 2016 EBITDA?
Sorry, didn't get the first part of the question. Yeah, the what flows through, if you, and I apologize,
that's
I'm going to take you into the tables and earnings release, so I'm going to flip some pages. But if you go to page 12 of the earnings release, we always add back the customer payments received under loan and lease receivable. So in 2016, for the full year, it was $13 million compared to 27 in 2015. So the $40 million incremental that we're talking about, we're taking the $52 million that we received and assuming that the run rate for, you know, a normal kind of run rate for 2017 would have been around $12 or $13 million.
Got it. All right. Thank you very much. And then very last question. Sorry, you did mention the prepared remarks, and I don't recall seeing this in press release, but 15 to 20 million, I guess, benefit included in the EBITDA guide for 2017 from reclamation. Is that correct? And if so, does that continue into 2018?
Yeah. So what we did is we went with the restatement. I won't go through all the geography and the technical accounting. Obviously, feel free to call me later, and I'll walk you through it. But the receipts, the cash received that we get for reclamation now flows through revenue and therefore EBITDA. So what we wanted to do is remind everybody that in the 2016 result, that included $6.1 million of what I'm going to call restatement adjusted EBITDA for 2017 guidance, assume that's 15 to 20. I don't have an answer for you in 18, and frankly, at some point, that'll just be part of the business.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
David, it can be lumpy, right, because it'll hit EBITDA almost dollar for dollar, and that'll follow as we're doing reclamation, so that part of adjusted EBITDA going forward can and probably will be lumpy.
Okay. Got it.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Mark Levin from Seaport Global. Please go ahead.
All right. Good afternoon, guys. Just a quick question. I think you referenced it in your remarks, the Coal Valley mine. You mentioned strategic process. I think on the last call you talked about aggressively pursuing monetization. Can you maybe provide us an update in terms of, what you're seeing in the marketplace and potential timing? Is that something that you feel confident will occur this year, or it's still just too early to know or tell?
I can give you an update, Mark. It's probably not going to be the level of detail you're looking for. But in late 16, we engaged an advisor to formally run a process for Coal Valley. It's been a very robust and a very thorough process. I'd say overall it's going well. Can't say much more than that, but we'll share details as soon as we can, probably in the coming months.
Got it. And then just with regard to what's going on in Alberta, you referenced obviously the Genesee transaction that was spurred by the arrangement that Cap Power had made. I'm just curious, they've got, some pretty hard deadlines, at least that they are theoretically shooting for in terms of getting rid of coal in the province. Where are we now? Are you having discussions with other counterparties about similar type payments or accelerated payments in the event of closure? What's the update?
Mark, all of our contracts are a little bit different. And so the Genesee Capital Power contract included recovery. And our other contracts have those automatic levers built into them where we would recover any kind of stranded capital. That said, the province of Alberta has committed that they're going to make everybody whole here as to how they're impacted by this transition. And as they do that, we have a very strong argument that we're equally as impacted, if not more impacted, than what our customers are. So, we believe that we'll be made whole here for this major change in their energy policy.
And then the third and final question, then I'll let someone else have at it, but just in terms of the guidance, you talk about 280 to 310 million being the range, but also noted that you have pretty conservative estimates for weather and that weather tends to be what drives the results the most. So what gets you, how do you end up at the low end and how do you end up at the high end?
Yeah, Mark, our model pretty well, right? Assuming that 90% of it is kind of locked in,
right?
Margin protected. So it's demand. It comes down to how many tons we move. So I think you look at 2016 as an interesting proxy, as I think where we were in the second quarter of 2016 and kind of reiterating guidance at that point, and then got help through the third and fourth quarter and, delivered two consecutive record quarters. Obviously all driven by, by demand. So probably not a whole lot of color I could add there.
I think Gary made, the comment in his opening remarks that, we factored in this Q1 because of where we sit today and how
right.
late our earnings call is this year. So we factored that in. So I would say another very strong summer, going into fall and a strong demand in Q3 and early Q4. Strong winter again up in Canada like we saw this year, very cold November, December. Customers were burning at a very high level. I think that gets us to the upper end of the guidance range.
Got it. So it's very weather-related. One last just to sneak in. When will you guys begin the process of the WMLP refinancing? Any kind of color you can provide there?
Yeah, what I can tell you, and it's kind of reiterating what Kevin said in his prepared comments, we've added throughout 2016, we added several board members who bring with them just a depth of kind of capital markets experience. So we formed this finance committee of the board, and together, Kevin, myself, other members of management, together with the finance committee, will really be looking at all options and evaluating the best plans and scenarios for using the cap power money, and just generally looking at how we strengthen our balance sheet and improve our liquidity. Obviously, San Juan, the escalators that we face there, and the MLP debt maturity are key areas of focus. But what I'll tell you is we'll be developing a plan with that finance committee and sharing with the broader street as that plan unfolds and is more thoroughly developed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please push star 1 on your telephone keypad now. Our next question comes from the line of Peter Sitsky from Stonehill. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Congratulations and thank you on a great quarter and a great year. You mentioned that you're not going to give detailed guidance by entity, but in March of last year, you kind of broke it down by MLP parent company in San Juan as guidance. So can you historically go back and give us maybe just on the cash flow line how it broke between those entities?
Yeah, I mean, you can see, and part of the reason we gave guidance last year in 2016 going through the entities was, you know, the MLP was, I'm going to say, still relatively new, but we had bolted on San Juan, and we just want to make sure people have the right color. San Juan generated a significant amount of cash and obviously paid down, took that note from $125 million down to $90 or $95 million. You saw the MLP finish the year. I don't have the number exactly on my test. I think it was about $20 or $25 million of cash on hand at the MLP, so we significantly reduced the net debt there, and then the remainder of the cash sitting, you know, sitting at the parent. So decent cash generation across all the entities.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. That's a fair amount of cash that ended up at the parent company at December 31st, and it, I guess you really outperformed all expectations, maybe even your own, in the fourth quarter there. Does that mean leaving with that cash there on December 31st that you're going to be making a cash flow sweep at 101 of the bank debt?
No, I don't believe on the cash flow sweep calculation. I don't believe that we will be forcing a sweep in that cash to take down the debt.
That cash instead would be used to, it can be swapped out to redeem debt. Is that how you're thinking of it?
That's correct. That's correct. I think as we view it, Gary touched on the process that we're going through with the finance committee. I think we're viewing the cash we have on hand at year end plus the capital power money that we just got here as part of an overall larger transaction, and that's what the focus will be here going forward.
Okay, great. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Schausitz from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Quick question. The CapEx level you're projecting for this year, is that, you view that as sort of sustainable level of CapEx? And do you plan on financing a portion of that CapEx, or do you expect that to be a cash outlay?
The CapEx that we've quoted as part of the guidance is anticipated at this point to be a cash outlay. We think about long term, we think about kind of our blended CapEx spend, if you will, cash spend around $1 to $1.50 a ton. Obviously, there's variability. You have a big job, a big dragline job, versus a year where you just have smaller pieces. I would argue that if, you know, the right opportunities came up to do leasing and other things around our CapEx program, like we availed ourselves in 2016, we would certainly evaluate those and look to keep cash on hand and take on some lower cost leases. But as it stands today, that CapEx component as part of our guidance is a true cash outlay for capital expenditures.
And that's the full CapEx across all entities, right? That's you expect to spend 40 to 50, and just for planning purposes right now, assuming that's cash. Can you give any color? How much debt repayment? I mean, I guess I haven't seen the year-end financials yet. In terms of how much required debt repayment at the WLB level do you expect to have in 2017? In other words, how much call on the free cash flow at WLB is already spoken for, and how much might be sort of discretionary available to repurchase either term debt or bonds?
Yeah, the biggest call for cash at the parent level is really capital leases and interest expense, Michael. So the scheduled payments at the parent are fairly low in 2017, below $5 million, I believe. And really what you're looking at is the amortization, the payoff of the capital leases and frankly, the interest expense.
But, Mike, when we talk about our 2017 strategy being like 2016's, the intent here is to still plow the cash back to paying down the debt and delevering and de-risking the business. And so, you know, we'll look at every alternative and how best to do that and factoring in the upcoming maturities. But there's been no change in our commitment towards paying down the debt.
Gotcha. So, I mean, basically your free cash flow guidance for the year is sort of after interest expense, but pre any debt repayment, right? That's kind of the right way to think about it?
That's correct.
Okay. And working capital, you feel you're at a comfortable level now, working capital, or is there further cash that might be squeezed out of that, from that source?
You know, our team did a great job on the working capital initiatives in 2016, and my hat's off to them for optimizing parts inventory, consolidating the purchasing power, and there were some real wins in terms of major cost reductions on contracts that end up getting passed along to our customers that you guys necessarily wouldn't have seen in our results. But going forward, I can safely say they're not done. It's just really hard to quantify both from a dollar perspective and also from a timing perspective. So, but you can be assured our team's not done and they'll continue going after more of it. But it's difficult to build into guidance or quantifying the calls here for you guys.
Okay. And I guess I don't know if it's out yet. I mean, is the 10-K should be available shortly or when should we expect to see that?
Yeah, this is Gary. The 10-K, I believe, is in process in the pipelines with the SEC, so should be released this afternoon if we miss the deadline first thing tomorrow. I don't mean to imply if we miss the deadline. I know we're sensitive to that. If just by the time we get XBRL through the SEC process, it may ultimately come out tomorrow morning. But we're hoping today.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ashwin Reddy from Venner Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, congrats on a great quarter and a great finish to the year.
Thanks, Ashwin.
No problem at all. Couple quick ones for you. The first one was on Jewett and Beulah. I was wondering if you could just remind me quickly as we're kind of thinking about, you know, the bridge from 16 to 17, just that impact that, you know, was knowable and, you know, we're kind of thinking about what kind of EBITDA contributions those were in 16 from those contracts that were known to be expired.
Yeah, I think combined year-on-year, there's probably a $10 million impact between Beulah and Jewett. And that's probably the majority of the step-down in our EBITDA represents the, you know, the lion's share. I think we discussed Beulah would step down in past calls. I think we were, you know, the final couple years or 16 might have been somewhere in the $5, $6 million EBITDA range, and it's probably, you know, low single digits right now. So I think there's probably about a $5 or $6 million year-on-year step down at Beulah. And again, the rest is just Jewett. And nothing has really changed on the reclamation project that we have down there other than the timing. And we've got a plan that puts forward that probably executes this over a longer time period than what we would have initially thought. But that's probably, you know, if Beulah step down year on year is six plus or minus, then the Jewett impact is probably four plus or minus.
Gotcha. Okay. And then when we think about the other opportunities kind of in the balance sheet, I know in the past we talked about potential equipment level financing to bring in some additional cash onto the balance sheet to go and pay down some higher cost debt. And I was curious kind of, you know, where that kind of position stands, and if you still think that is kind of an opportunity for you guys to maximize the balance sheet.
We believe there still is an opportunity there to layer on additional equipment financing, so which, again, will free up cash to pay down higher-cost debt. We made really good progress on this initiative through 2016, and until that change in our revolver banking group basically just pushed the year into where it was late enough in the year where our partners were requiring audited financials, and it got delayed. But with the 10-K filed here, we'll begin hitting this one hard again. And I think the worst case here is we continue to layer on attractive rate leases as we did in 2016 as we incur them. But ideally, there's a larger transaction to refi all of our leased equipment in an aggregate transaction.
Yeah, okay. And then the last one for me is, I know you'd mentioned Rova not being able to, the deal that you have struck at Rova allows you to potentially monetize the plant there. So I guess I was curious as to how should we all kind of think about the timing of that? Is that something potentially, if you guys decide to do it, could be a 17 event, or it's potentially an 18 event, and kind of how that decision process would be made?
I think, as you know, part of our priorities for 2017, it's the full resolution of those cash drag non-core assets, and so we hope to fully come to resolution on Coal Valley. And then we hope to fully come to a resolution on Rova. But I wouldn't set expectations very high on, you know, Rova being a major source of cash flow in terms of just selling the physical asset down there. So I wouldn't put expectations up high for that one.
Gotcha. I mean, it would more of something like, you know, accelerating maybe the remaining portion of the collateral in exchange for the plant, something like that, make sense? Or is that kind of the way to think about it? Or?
I think the release of the collateral is really going to just be driven by, you know, the market calculation, which is based on energy prices and time. And so as we've transitioned here from going from an operating facility to basically just a contract execution where we're buying the power under contract, buying the capacity under contract, and selling it, it's sort of just the math of rolling along plus energy prices. But you know, if we saw a rebound in gas and energy prices here, then that would accelerate that cash flow back to us. But I think, you know, the fact that we're not operating the plant anymore de-risks it to a certain extent, but I think it's going to be basically just mathematical over the remaining contract purchases we have to do.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Well, that takes care of my questions, guys. Appreciate it again. Congrats on a great quarter.
Thanks,
Ashwin.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of David Gagliano from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi again. Thanks for taking the follow-up. It's actually related to my questions in the beginning and then also a lot of the answers, I think, during this Q&A. I was wondering, as we go into 2018, it looks like obviously there's a bit of a headwind here on year-over-year basis on EBITDA and free cash, you know, roughly $50 million headwind year over year. I'm wondering if you could give us a sense as to some of the offsets, because I know there are definitely offsets with regards to Rova, Coal Valley, et cetera. If you could just help us quantify some of those offsets as we enter 2018 to get that EBITDA back up into that sort of 260, 270 zone again.
Yeah, David, thanks. And you're right. I mean, it's when we acquired San Juan, we were anticipating and had modeled out the closure of two of those units, and obviously have done a great job of taking cost out ahead of that and continue to see San Juan run ahead of plan. So despite the planned EBITDA step down in San Juan from those two units coming offline, part of the offset is the fact that we've been able to maximize our adjusted EBITDA and cash flow there by keeping costs down. And then the other piece, obviously you lose a small part of Kemmer. The offsets are certainly Rova. So when I look at Rova from now through the beginning of 2019, we were expected to burn cash of, let's call it, $22 to $25 million. We've effectively cut that in half, and we'll get, you know, instead of $22 million of cash coming back offset by those losses. We'll get that $22 million back, and effectively half of it will be ours, given that we've cut that loss in half. Having Coal Valley out, Coal Valley, just from an accounting perspective, Coal Valley is actually a drag to 2017 EBITDA despite being cash flow break even. So, if you will, as you bridge 18 from 17, you'll see a little bit of a pickup as that small EBITDA drag of Coal Valley runs off as we go through this year.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions in queue at this time. I would like to turn the floor back over to management for closing comments.
I would just thank everybody for their participation in the call, and we look forward to speaking to folks in the near future here in our Q1 call. Thank you, everyone.